Sophie, and I'm one of the youth pastors here at Christchurch. And tonight is the first evening in a set of three evenings, the parenting sessions, parenting your teen for emotional wellness. So I'm sure we have lots of parents in the room. We might also have some people who work with young people as well. So you are very welcome. Thank you so much for coming. And as we are all aware, we are sadly in a crisis at the moment in the UK with teen mental health. But at Christchurch, we still believe that there is hope for our young people in this generation to thrive in the midst of adversity. And so we would love for you guys to go away with some really practical tools to help you this evening. But most of all, we really want you to go away with hope that there is hope for the young people that you work with and hope for the young people who are in your families. So we really hope that you go away with that this evening. And I'm also aware that for some of you in the room, you might actually be in the middle of a very real crisis with maybe a member of your family or someone that you're working with. And so because of that, we have people around the tables. Can you give me a wave, lanyard wearing people? So hopefully there will be a person around each of your tables, or someone will come and join you, and they are there just to help facilitate discussion. So we'll have some discussion this evening, and they'll also be there to chat with one-on-one if you would like that. So at the end, we'll just have an opportunity. If you want to chat with someone, you can do that. Also, we are a church that is hosting this, and we would love to offer prayer to anyone who would like it. That's not a prerequisite. You don't need to have that, but that is something that we can offer if you would like that. So please do ask anyone on the tables with a lanyard on, and they can chat to you or pray with you. So this evening will look like Amelia, our speaker, is going to come and share with us. Then we'll have some opportunity to discuss some things around our tables. And then we'll have time for a Q&A at the end. So if you have any questions going around your mind while Amelia is speaking to us, then it'd be a great time to ask those at the end. So I am very pleased to introduce our speaker this evening. She is Amelia Fuller. She has been a youth counselling pastor and a life consultant, and has also done loads of youth work over the last 10 years. So she's got loads of experience with teenagers. She's going to be speaking to us tonight about how to communicate with our teens, which we all know can be a difficult and tricky thing to do. So please welcome Amelia.
My mic on? It is. I've never spoken with one of these mics before, so I'm living all my Britney dreams. I'll tell you how old I am, because then it will give you the reference. I'm making a playlist because I'm turning 40 next week, and it's all been like Backstreet Boys, Britney. So when they're like, where's this mic? I was like, ooh. So anyway, yeah, like Sophie said, we're going to talk about communication tonight, which is one of my favourite topics, something I'm really passionate about. Spent lots of time studying and spent lots of time with teenagers. She said 10 years. I worked out the other day. I've actually been working with teenagers for about 20 years. So I started from being a youth leader at university through to being youth counselling pastor at my last church. So I've had lots of conversations with teenagers and parents too. So my hope this evening is to equip you with some tools that you can go away with and practice. But before we do that, because I've introduced myself, I thought it'd be good for you to introduce yourselves on your table. We're just going to be really quick. Don't want to lose you for a long time. You know, when I do this, have done this with teenagers, that's I've lost the room for the rest of the night. But we're grown-ups, and we can do it. So just really quick, say your name, maybe something you're hoping for tonight, or teenagers you own or take care of, or corralling like dinosaurs. So yeah, let's just do that really quickly. Go around your table. All right, let's be speeding up if we're not done. But if you're not done, someone wave at me from your table. If you are, I'll assume. If you're giving me eye contact, I'm going to assume your table is done. Not quite, almost. I'll just move on. Okay. Just 2 seconds. I will say this. As whenever I teach tools to people, they're like, okay, I've got to be an expert. I've got to get this right the first time. Please don't go away thinking that. With any new tool, it takes time to learn how to use it, and you probably get it wrong. I'll give you an example. My first day on the job as youth counseling pastor, I was taking over from my predecessor, and I'd been doing the job with him for a while, and then it was my first day, and we had a youth club of around 200 to 300 kids on a Wednesday night every week. So whenever you put 200 to 300 hormonal teenagers in a room, stuff's going to happen. And usually when stuff happened, I would just defer to my friend who had the job before me, and stuff happened, and I turned to defer to him, and I was like, oh no, that's me now. How I'd like to communicate it went was that the conversation went, hey guys, what's going on? What's happening here? To give you context, they had like an hour to hang out, play games, all of this, and then they'd come together for like 10 to 20 minutes, someone talked to them, and they were chatting after an hour of doing that already. And I was like, hey, I would love to say it went, hey guys, what's happening? And they're like, oh, we're catching up. Great, I love that you're catching up. We've just spent an hour catching up. Do you think you can manage yourself for the next 10, 15 minutes, or do you need my help? I'd like to say it went like that. It did not go like that. It went, hey guys, what's going on? And they're like, go away. Who are you? Yeah, I did not handle it very well. We ended up leaving the room, and it was just way bigger than it needed. It could have just been a quick, hey, do you need my help managing yourselves, or can you do it yourselves? You know, do you need my help or not? And if they're like, we can do it, I'd be like, all right, I'm just going to stand here and make sure you can do it. And if I think you can't, I'm going to help you, which would mean separating them. But anyway, that's how it ended when I finished. But initially when I started, it took me a while to kind of get into the rhythm of this is how we talk. We connect, then we talk about consequences, and yeah. So all that to say, set really healthy expectations for yourself of I won't always get this right, and that's okay. We're all learning together. So I'm going to start talking a little bit about why communication is important. There might be stuff that you already know. There might be some new stuff, and hopefully it's helpful. I would encourage you to take notes just because it helps you. Even if you never go back to the notes, it helps you retain. It's between 10 and 20% of what you've heard. Even if you never read the notes again, you remember that amount. I'll also say this. If you think of questions while I'm talking, write your questions down. Because if you think of a question, then you get worried you're going to forget the question, and then you stop listening because you're so focused on remembering your question, which you might forget anyway. And so if you've written it down, you know you've got it. So there we go. So communication is important because it's a connector. It's what helps us connect to each other. It helps us understand people. It helps us know people. It also helps us feel really loved when someone knows us. It's how we get our needs met. We communicate. We say, I need. And then when that need gets met, you feel known and loved because you communicated. Now, for teenagers, that's quite difficult. They don't know how to do that yet. And that's where you come in. I don't know if you know this, but 93% of communication is nonverbal, which is a very high percentage, which means it's in our body language, it's in our hand gestures, it's in our facial expressions. I'm one of those people who cannot hide my emotions in my face. I really wish I could. When I'm counseling, the one time I can do it is when I'm counseling. I have a counselor face, but the rest of the time, I cannot hide my emotions. Teenagers are a bit like that. Often you can read their faces, but also sometimes their faces give you nothing. I don't know if you've experienced that. You're saying something, you're like, I know this is really good, and they're just like, okay, and walk off, and you're like, that was my best material, and I got an okay. So we have to get really good at reading people's cues, like reading body. So if someone's standing here, like if I was standing here like this is quite closed body language, you know, I'm figuring out if I'm safe in the room. Whereas I'm standing like this, so I feel quite safe in the room. But when you're talking to someone, it's actually watching, okay, what is their body telling me? It's getting to know that. It's also silence is a huge communicator. We're always communicating, whether it's with words or without. So it's learning to listen with our eyes is what I'm trying to communicate with that. I mentioned that I was a youth counseling pastor. I was also just a counseling pastor at my church. So I saw all kinds of people in my office. I had all the people that the past general staff pastors didn't know what to do with came to my office. So it was fun days. But I would watch how people arrived in my office. I'd watch how they sat on the sofa. But something I learned, and something that's is well known, is people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So when we're trying to build connection with our communication, we have to start at communicating care. I'll always change names, so I'll tell you stories, but I'll change the names, so that's never their name. I once had a 19-year-old come into my office who had, the Americans say, was blowing up her life, which translated to she's breaking the law, and came in she was really relaxed, sat back, you know, and some teenagers will do this, is that they'll lean back and seem like they really don't care, but actually they really do care. They're just waiting to see if you care about them. And so, you know, as with all my meetings, I'll start being like, so why are you here today? And she was like, I don't know. I was like, okay. Any guesses? She's like, don't know. I was like, okay, what happened? I got caught drinking. Okay, why is that a problem? Well, I'm not 21 yet. Okay, well, let's talk about that. What happened? She's like, well, I've just told you what happened. I'm like, no, what happened in you that you felt like you needed to do that? Like, what's going on with you? And so I'm trying to communicate I care through asking the questions. People think you're going to go straight to consequences, which consequences are important, but connection is more important first. Like, we start, which I'm going to go more into. So the goal with building connection first is whatever people help build, they'll help support. So if you build connection with your teenagers or with a teenager, they feel connected to you and they feel love is there, they've got something to protect. And so they're less likely to, you know, they'll think twice about making hard choices because they feel, they're like, oh, I want to protect my connection to my parent. Versus who cares what they think, they don't care about me, even though obviously we all know that's not true, but teenage brains that are not fully developed yet jump to all kinds of places. And the thing is, when we're, if you have a disconnected teenager, you have a teenager who is assuming the worst in you. And that's true of all humankind. If you feel if you just think about any of your friends, or family that you feel disconnected from, it's really easy to assume the worst in them than to assume that they care for you. With your adult brain, you can logic your way out of that by just remembering who they are, remembering your history with them. But teenagers don't have that their prefrontal cortex, which is their center of logic, cause and effect, isn't developed yet. So they can't get there. They can't get to, of course they care for me because they've taken care of my needs here, here, and here. You're not giving me what I want right now, so therefore you don't care about me. Which is, yeah, we all know it's not true, but they're teenagers, so it's our job to help them. I want to say at this point, understanding and agreement are not the same thing. So we can sit and understand why someone has done something, but it doesn't mean we have to agree with them. So in my experience, teenagers want authentic, they want real, they want you to understand. They're like, oh, you don't understand. It's like, well, I'd love to understand, help me understand. Which we'll get to some tools for that in a bit. But you can sit and understand them, but it doesn't mean you have to agree with them, which, you know, I'm obviously preaching to the choir here, but it's just something to say because sometimes we don't think about that. Communication in its best form is a response, not a reaction. So I don't, you know, the thing about family dynamics is we all know how to push each other's buttons. You know, your siblings know how to push your buttons, your kids know how to push your buttons, you know how to push their buttons. And it's really hard not to react, which is where something like, you know, is actually being able to take a breath and the bathroom is an amazing tool to actually be like, okay, I need to gather my thoughts and think about how I want to respond. I don't want to react in this moment. Because our teenagers, the whole time, they are sponges. Children are sponges the whole time. You know, you've moved on from the whys to the why nots. And it's like, okay, they're watching how you respond. And they're like, okay, that's how I respond in that situation. And so it's like actually sometimes like, okay, I need to take a time out and go do that. Consistency is the best form of communication. So we stay on the same message. Like I said before, no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care. I had this beautiful teenager how old was she at the time? She was 14, who came into our youth ministry. I knew a bit of her history. I knew some stuff that was happening at home. And she gave me that I don't care face every time I saw her. Every week, and every week we go up to her, I'd ask the same questions, I'd hug her, she never hugged me back, it was always a, don't you love a straight arm hug, like you're going for a hug, and they're like this, when will this end? and so I'd go in and I'd do that, and it was the when will this end every time, and I did it consistently for, I think it was 6 months, and after 6 months she actually hugged me back, and I was like, I've made it, I'm in. But it was 6 months, grueling months of why are you talking to me again? Why are you doing this? And then something switched of, oh, maybe you do care. And then that shifted our whole relationship. And yeah, it was much easier from then on. I mean, it doesn't mean she didn't have challenges, but we had connection. And so she would come and find me instead of me going to find her after that. So it's just remaining consistent with that. In a way, I was actually having this conversation with Sophie the other day. Teenagers are a lot like toddlers. They're learning how to, they want their independence, and they think they don't need you, but actually that's when they need you the most. The difference is with teenagers is they have a lot of words that they can use, they just choose not to use them. But, you know, the drama and everything that comes with being a teenager today, I think teenagers today need way more help than when I was a teenager 20 years ago. They need way more input. They need you to keep asking questions. They need you to keep close to them because of, yeah, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I really would hate to be a teenager today. It's just not fun. And I think something that's important to note here is remembering that a teenager's behavior or choices they make are not a reflection on your ability to parent. It's actually a commentary on what's going on inside of them, but they can't find the words to tell you. So that's always like, whenever I've worked with teenagers that have bad attitude or are acting out in some way, my first question is what's going on inside of them? that's causing them to feel like they have to, like, what is the need that needs to get met here? There's a need somewhere deep inside the behind the face that tells me everything, like, to go away, or, you know, I don't want to spend time with you. There's something going, like, there's a need that needs to get met, and they're trying to get it met in all kinds of ways. Maybe that they're learning on TV or from social media or from their friends. And so it's our job as adults to jump in and try and help them the best we can. Yeah. You know, kids are doing the best they can with what they have, just like you are. But what they have is just very limited. And if they're not talking to you, they're talking to their friends. And teenagers give terrible advice. I don't know if you've ever heard a teenager giving another teenager. I used to listen. I'd do these youth camps every summer, and I'd have to sleep in the dorms with them, and I'd lie there at night listening to them giving each other advice. And I'm like, that is the worst advice I've ever heard. But they think they're so wise, and, you know, they're really, like, really helping each other. And I'm like, you are making it so much worse. What are you doing? But so that's where it's like, okay, we've got to help them. Something I think is really big, I'd say for teenagers, but I'd say just for humans, is reframing failure. I think we, particularly as British people, so having worked in America, I had lots of internationals where I was working, and I saw the same thing with English people, and I've experienced in my own life, this fear of failure. Like, failure's fatal. It's like the worst thing that could ever happen. And actually, really, in reality, as we get older, we learn failure is an opportunity to learn. And if we can help teenagers learn that quite early on, we're really helping them navigate their teenage years a lot better. Because it's not fatal. It really isn't. It's like, you know, you fall over, you usually fall forwards. You haven't fallen backwards. I mean, sometimes you fall backwards, but you're still ahead of where you started, and usually you just get back up and you move on. Dust yourself off, maybe cry a bit because you're embarrassed that you fell over in front of everyone. But it's just helping them navigate through that failure is not a source of shame. It's not something to be embarrassed by. You just learn a way of not doing something. You're like, okay, well, obviously that doesn't work, so I won't do it that way again. Now, when your child fails, it's how do you enter in? Like, you've got to choose what your goal is right from the beginning. Like, is your goal to remain connected to them through it, or is your goal to get some obedience quickly? So one way takes a bit more work than the other. The other's quite quick results. But if we lead with consequences... You know, usually when a teenager messes up, it's a bit bigger than when a four-year-old, like if my four-year-old nephew messes up, it's like, okay, we're over that in a couple of minutes. But teenagers often is a bit bigger. So it's like, okay, am I willing to sit with you and like join with you and be like, okay, what are we going to do about this? It's remembering that not to define them by that moment, but by who they are on their best day. So when, you know, I've had some teenagers do some really wonderful things, just working with them as a youth pastor, and we once had, we did the summer camp, but it was like an on-site, and we'd rented this building, and at lunchtime, one of the kids went to the next door building, and he carved his name in the air vents and caused over $10,000 worth of damage. And quite rightly so, the owner of that building came just like, your teenager has done this. We're like, okay, let us see. And we looked at it and we're like, well, he's carved his name, so obviously we know who it is. He's not that smart. And you're like, why did you do it? I don't know. And he literally doesn't know, because he doesn't have that prefrontal cortex. And we're like, okay, let's talk about, like, and we had quite a good connection with this kid. So we're like, why, you know, what were you thinking about right before? I was bored. Okay, do you think that's the best source of your, you know, best thing to do? Anyway, we brought his parents in, and they actually did a phenomenal job with him. And they talked to who, they were like, think of a name for him quick so I don't say his actual name. Ben, like, Ben, we know this isn't who you are. This is not your normal behavior, but we've got a problem here. So what are we going to do about it? And he was like, I don't know. He's 14-year-old. I don't know. And his mom was like, well, I have some ideas. Would you like to hear my ideas? And he's like, okay. She's like, well, we can try and fix it ourselves. And if not, you're going to have a long summer. and he's like, she's like, we can do either. We could start with you having a long summer, or we could start with trying to fix it. And he was like, I want to try and fix it. And she's like, okay. And she did it with him, and which is impressive because it was summer where I lived and it's incredibly hot. We're in the high desert. So we're getting up to like 40, 45 degrees every day. And so she was out there with him, like doing it with him. And it was a very painful lesson for him. But she met him with connection first, and she talked to him as who he is on his best day, and then followed with consequences. But she stuck by his side through it and remained connected. And actually, that kid today is like, she's doing really well now. He's now out of, he's college age now, so which makes me feel even older. Let's take a 5-minute break there and have a little neighbor nudge on your table that you can talk about. If you've, any questions have come up, something that you've learned that was new, something that you don't agree with, or you're like, I'm not sure about that, or I want to know more about that. Just have a little chat on your table. If you want to start wrapping up, I'll give you another minute, and then we'll come back. Okay, I'm going to cut you off there. I know you're probably all in great conversations. Sometimes the best thing about these things is the conversations you have on your tables, and the connections you make. So, yeah, it's important to know you're not, you know, you're in it with other people. We all need traveling companions when we're doing hard things, which is what you're doing. Okay, this next section, I'm going to give you some tools. They're in no particular order. They're just tools that I found helpful with teenagers. They're actually tools that are just helpful in life. You're welcome to use them for yourself. Some of them are more broad, like general well-being, and then some of them are specific. So we'll kind of come in and out of those. And then we'll leave more time for you guys to talk again. So, yeah. So I feel like I've hit this home about 20 times, so I'm just going to say it really quickly of just make sure you define your goal for yourself, like in all communication. It's like, okay, what is my goal? Because if we go into something not knowing what a goal is, we're just kind of aiming blindly. Like, you know, if you don't have a plan, you plan to fail. It's something that is said quite a lot. So it's like, okay, my goal is connection. That will determine how I respond to each situation. The thing, like, if we lead with connection, what you have is, and you have connected teenagers, is you have open teenagers, and you actually get to see the real them. If we lead with, I'm just trying to get some obedience here and compliance, what you get is actually shut down teenagers who won't bring their stuff to you. You want to be their first phone call. Like, if they epically fail, you want to be their first phone call. And we get that through connection, which is a slightly longer road, but it's more fruitful in the long run. This is a broad one. Do your children know your family story, and do you have a family story? There was a study that was done in 2001. Very conveniently, 9/11 happened, which is really awful, but it was really convenient for this study. And what they did, it was about, I think it was about 4 or 5 months before 9/11 happened, which obviously they never knew was going to happen. They went in to a school and they just asked kids, what do you know? And they'd be like, what do I know about what? And they're like, tell me what you know about your family. And they just asked them questions like, do you know where your parents met or how they met? Do you know about your grandparents? Do you know your cousins? Do you know, like, they just ask them about their family story. And there was quite a, you know, broad spectrum of answers. Some kids knew nothing and some kids knew loads. And then 4 or 5 months later, tragically, 9/11 happened. And they're like, oh, we can measure how kids are affected by trauma by what they know. So they went back in and they observed that the kids who knew all about their family history, knew what they were part of, weathered the trauma much easier than the kids who knew nothing because they felt connected to something bigger than themselves. Which I find fascinating. I find these things really fascinating. So if you don't, it's all right. But it's, and then I, that got me, when I read about that study, it got me thinking about how I grew up and my parents love telling stories. You know, we had dinner at the table every night and my dad just loved to tell us stories about all the pranks he played in his youth and how him and my mum met, how my grandparents met. Like, I know all my cousins by name. Like, I have a relationship with them. So I feel very connected to something that's bigger than me. And you know, and if I have to define my family, I'm like, Fullers show up for their family. You know, we'll sacrifice for our family. Fullers are, you know, these are things that my parents would communicate to us as we were children. They're like, my dad said, family comes first. That was something that we were told over and over again. My dad's from a very strong Catholic family, so that's quite normal. Fullers are also very generous people, and Fullers are fun, and that was modeled. And so that was my family story that I was a part of, that I always had something to come back to fall back on whenever I hit something hard. And so actually when I actually went to school just across the road here at Clifton High, back when it was just a girls' school, which is not for the faint of heart. I did not enjoy school. But what happened was I got started getting bullied. And, you know, girls are mean. I mean, really mean. You know, now I was like just thinking about, I was mentioning to someone at the beginning, like cancel culture makes everything so, you know, can't get anything when you have to say the right thing. But I teased a girl about fancying a boy and I got bullied for a week because of it and like completely cut off from my friends. But because I had connection with my dad, he picked it up on the first day. Like, we were sitting at dinner and he said, you're not your normal, what's going on? And I was just like, nothing, it's fine. You know, classic teenage girl. And he was like, no, what? Tell me what's happening. Something's happening. You're not your normal. This is not normal, Amelia. What is happening? And so I told him, and the next morning he's on the phone to the school, and I happened to have the scariest tutor in the whole school. Everyone was scared of her, but she loved me. And so when the girls found out a few days later that she knew what they were doing, they instantly stopped. Yeah, that was beneficial. But I say all of that to say, you know, story's important. You know, kids, if we don't give them a story to be a part of, they'll make up their own. And so it's better to give them something to be a part of. There's an author called Donald Miller. He actually now teaches a lot about business, but he used to write other kinds of books. And he wrote this book called A Million Miles in a Thousand Years, which is talking about the power of story in our life and how we're all living a story. And in it, he shares a story of a friend of his whose teenage daughter was making life choices. Like, she was smoking weed. She had a very questionable boyfriend. And she was slowly shutting down. And the parents were like, we are losing our sweet girl down this path and we don't know how to get her back. And Donald Miller says he was writing the book at the time he had this meeting. And he said, oh, well, what's your family story? And he was like, what are you talking about? He's like, what's your family story? Like, what story is she a part of? Does she know? And so the dad, very, you know, he came up with a great idea, but he did not run it past his wife, which apparently did not go down well. But he said, just announced, yeah, so we're going to raise £10,000 for an orphanage. And his wife was like, we are? Okay. But if I fast forward, the end of the story is within a few days, their daughter was in their room saying, I was thinking I could write a blog about raising this money and maybe we could go and I could take photos. And they're like, yeah, that's a great idea. And And then within 2 weeks, she dumped the boyfriend and they felt like they had their daughter back because they gave her something to be a part of. But because they hadn't, she found her own story. So it's just, I'm just supporting my point of story's important. Similar language, but different tool. This is a really helpful tool in life, but it's called What's the Story You're Telling Yourself? We all have an internal narrative in our heads. So with every interaction we have with someone else, we tell ourselves a story about that. An example could be, and usually the story, you know, the conclusion we land on is often something to do with our insecurities. But this is a tool you can give to your teenagers to help them communicate what's going on inside of them. But I'll give you an example. So an example could be, I am out walking across the downs, and Sophie sees me and she like waves, and I don't respond. I just keep walking. She's like, "Hey," and I don't respond. I keep walking. Now Sophie could go away and be like, start telling herself if she was feeling insecure about people liking her, she'd be like, "She saw me, but she ignored me." This is a story she starts to tell herself, and it's because she just generally just puts up with me when she's around. I knew it. I was right. But the truth is, what she doesn't know is, what could else have been going on is that I had my AirPods in, and I was really focused on where I was going, which is, this is very normal for me. So when I'm walking somewhere, I get really focused, and I shut the world out. Not intentionally, but if you get right in front of me, I'm like, "Oh, so nice to see you." But in the story, it could be that I just didn't see her. But she could continue walking around with this narrative, Amelia doesn't like me, she just puts up with me. And then the next time she sees me, that's how she approaches our connection, is in her mind, she's thinking that. So everything I'm saying is, she's thinking it from that place. Versus if she just said, "Hey, I saw you on the downs the other day, I waved, I yelled your name, but you didn't respond." I could be like, "Oh, I didn't see you. You should have got right in front of me. I'd have loved to have seen you. I wish you'd said hi." With a kid, you can be like, "Hey, how was your day at school today?" And they're like, "Whatever." It's like, tell me a bit more about it. Like, what's the story you're telling yourself about your day at school? When we start with, "Hey, this happened, and the story I'm telling myself is," it feels way less threatening and it doesn't feel as high stakes. So when you, and also this can be a tool for kids to come to you if you upset them, saying, hey mom, when you said this the other day, this is the story I started to tell myself. I started to tell myself that you didn't care. And then you can be like, "Oh no, that's not at all how I feel. I'm so glad you brought that to me." But when if we can give them language, and you can use it with them too, it's like, "Hey, when you answered back the other day, the story I started to tell myself was that you really don't respect me at all, and you don't care about my feelings. Is that true? I just want to check with you, because I don't want to make any assumptions." So there's another tool for you. Let's see if I missed anything with that one. Three of the greatest words to open people up are, "Tell me more." So when someone says, "You know, this happened, tell me more about that." It's quite hard to not answer that question. I don't know if you ever tried. If you say, "Oh yeah, I went to see this person the other day," and someone says, "Tell me more about that," you're just like, I don't know how to not answer and actually tell you more. And you can mix it in with reflective listening of, you know, so say we're using your kid comes home and they use the tool we've just talked about, and they say, "This happened at school today, and the story I'm telling myself is," your response could be to get more out of them. "I can't imagine how hard that was. Tell me more about that." And you're instantly, you're getting more information. The more information we have, the more we can do. And so when we just have like one or two words, it's really hard to kind of get a picture of what's going on. So when we use phrases like, tell me more. Another one you can use is, can you define that for me? So, you know, every English person's favorite word is fine when they're asked, how are you? How are you? Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, things are fine. So what does fine mean? Because my fine versus your fine could be something completely different. So that's where you can say, can you just define what you mean by fine for me? Because I think I have an idea, but I just want to make sure we have the same definition. And that way you get a bit, again, you get more information, you get a better understanding of how they are. You know, it's the asking again. It's like, you know, everyone expects you to ask. If someone asks you once, you're like, oh, it's just kind of a cordial. Like, you're just asking me because you've seen me. But if someone asks you twice, you're like, oh, maybe you actually want to know. And that's the thing with, and sometimes with teenagers, you have to ask them about 6 times. And even then, they're not sure if you want to know. But it's just, you just be persistent and consistent with checking in. Next tool, this is a really good one. When you get, you know, sometimes we say stuff to kids or to just people and we get a reaction that we're like, this is very disproportionate to what I think I just said. Don't know if you've ever experienced that. I experienced a lot with teenagers. And so I just say, hey, can you just tell me what you just heard me say? Because how you're responding to me feels very different to what I thought I said. And I want to check if I said what I thought I said. And that way you're giving them permission to tell you if they, one, they got hurt, or you can hear if maybe they got a bit triggered, or maybe they're just a bit grumpy and feeling defensive and that's all, and they did actually hear what you said. But it gives you some space to hear how they're listening. You know, because we all have lenses. You know, if you wear glasses like me, can't see without, well, I can see without them, but not very far. You know, we all see the world through different lenses, through different experiences, through things that have been said to us, all of this. So people can hear through those lenses too. So you can say something, but they hear something very different, which is where this tool is actually quite helpful. So you could say the kindest thing, and they hear, I hate you. And you're like, that's not what I said. But so you're giving yourself a chance to rephrase it in a way that maybe they can hear. And you can keep asking, you know, you can say it again. You're like, okay, tell me what you heard again. Tell me what you heard that time. Until you make sure the message you're trying to communicate gets across. And you heard me say earlier, like, the other question of what just happened. Like, what happened? Tell me what happened. So, you know, they get in a fight. Tell me what happened. I got in a fight. No, tell me what happened in you. That you felt like you had to do that. Another really good question is, you know, because you probably get a lot of the time, I don't know why I did it, is taking them back to what happened right before. So, okay, tell me about the half an hour right before that. Or tell me about your day leading up to that point. Like, what happened in your day? Because that, again, it's giving you more information, like a detective, like trying to discover what, you know, what led your child to the point where they felt like they had to lamp another kid. It's like, okay, tell me. And you then might find that they were getting teased all day long and it just built up and built up and built up and they just had to release it. You know, we have to, you know, anger isn't negative, it's just fear, and we're just trying to find control. And it's like anger has to find a way out of our body. And teenagers don't know how to do that. So we have to help them. It's like, oh, do we need to just throw, like, Taylor Swift, Shake It Off, and they'll be like, oh, cringe. Like, do we need to just throw that on and just shake it out of our bodies? Do you need to go for a run? Like, it's helping them find other solutions. So this is where failure doesn't become fatal. It's like an opportunity to learn of, like, okay, this has happened. We can't change it. If you're in that situation again, let's come up with a better plan of what you can do. When you feel so frustrated that you need to get it out, let's find another way for you to get it out, which could be screaming into a pillow. It could be, like I said, going for a run. It could be stomping your feet. you know, it could be ripping paper. It's just something that gets the that they have inside of their bodies out. Another thing that this is often more beneficial for parents is time out, which, you know, like you might, when they were little, put them in time out, but you might need to put you in time out sometimes. Of, you know, when we start to get frustrated or they do, voices rise, and when voices rise, ears shut down, and we go into defense mode. If you catch yourself beginning to feel like you need to defend each other, you actually stop listening to each other. And so that's where you can call a timeout and say, hey, we're going to just take a break and we're going to go away, have some time, and then we'll come back and we'll revisit this, which allows everyone to kind of cool down. And that might be 10 minutes, that might be overnight. Like, it's okay, but it's just giving space for not, you know, for things not to escalate. It's like, actually, I really care about our connection. And I know if we stay in this place right here, it's going to harm our connection, because we're both going to start saying things that perhaps we don't mean or don't want to say, but because we're frustrated and we're both trying to take control, which this might be a lot of your own internal conversation with yourself, because they may not get that, but it's a valuable tool of, hey, I've realized I'm not listening to you anymore because I'm just trying to defend myself. So let's take a break and come back. There's a thing called one-liners. They're beautiful things. They're a great way to not engage with disrespectful behavior or comments. They're also a way of, not like, there's always a temptation to stoop to that level of like name-calling. And I used to use these a lot in youth ministry. And the one-liners are, you'll get a little piece of paper with this on at the end. But probably so, I don't know, that could be, nice try, I know. Another one you can also use is ouch. Ouch is a great feedback word. It's like, ooh, ouch. The danger with these is not to sound sarcastic, because it's very easy to sound sarcastic. Where you're like, probably so. You're the worst. Probably so. So it's just actually learning to use them like where it feels appropriate. Of, you know, you're like, actually, you're not hearing me right now. I can tell you're not hearing me. I need to engage with you a little bit, but now is not the time to talk about what is going on. We just need to actually bring this to a close for here. So it's like, you know, you don't care. Nice try. You know, which is true. It's like, nice try. You're trying to hurt me right now. My nephew is not a teenager. He's now 6, but he was 4 when I first came back from America, and he discovered my button was to say, you should just go back to America, like when he was upset with me. And I just go, nice try. He'd be like, oh, and storm off because he hadn't got what he wanted. You know, and kids, they do try and get a rise out of you. So when you have these one-liners of like, ouch, you're letting them know, like, I understand you're trying to hurt me, but actually it's not working. And I'm going to remain where I am. I'm not moving. I'm staying where I am. I'm still here for you. I'm just not going to engage on this level right now. A little acronym for you is HALT. This is very old. I remember being taught this when I was a teenager. And they stand for hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And the question is are you or they one of those four or all of those four? Because when any of those four are in play, communication is hindered. Like, I don't know if you've tried to communicate when you're really desperately hungry. It's really hard. Like, some kids get really hangry, like they get really angry. It's like, you just need to eat. Let's not try and have a serious conversation when you just need food. Just need to get something in you, and then we'll try this again. But, you know, when we're helping, this can be a really helpful tool to help kids engage with self-compassion when they've had a hard day. So, you know, when we're at our best, we approach things, or we hope, really well. But when we're hungry or angry or we're lonely and tired, we're not operating at 100%. So we aren't giving our best to a situation. So our response won't necessarily be the best response. So we can help people identify, so, okay, when this happened, when this hard thing happened, were you any of these four things? Okay, so you weren't your best. Okay, that's all right. You know, on a different day, when you're not tired, you'll probably approach it differently. Let's talk about how you could approach that differently. So it's just a fun, and it's easy to remember. You know, I was taught it 20 years ago, and I still remember it today, and I still use it today. And, you know, when I start being hard on myself, I'm like, oh, hang on, am I any of these four? Okay, I'm going to be a bit easier because one of those things was at play. Another tool along the lines of self-compassion, and this is actually particularly good with girls, this one, is when kids are really hard on themselves, is actually asking them, okay, if your best friend was in the same situation you're in, what would you tell them? And that can help them. It's like, okay, so why is it different for you? You know, kids and people will commit hate crimes on themselves, like say things to themselves in their heads that they would never say ever out loud to someone else. And it's like, you know, you can talk to them. Another thing you can say is like, you know, if you said out loud to what you're saying to yourself, to a friend, how long would they want to be your friend? And sometimes helping people realize how hard they're being on themselves. And actually it's like, okay, when you say, oh, what would you say to your best friend? They're like, oh, I'd tell them just to go to bed and it'd be fine tomorrow. It's like, well, maybe you should do that. That sounds like a great idea. Or I'd say to them, oh, you know, we all have hard days and you just had a hard day. That sounds really good. It's just a helpful tool. This one is actually, I learned this in learning marriage counseling, but it works really well with teenagers. And it's you and them versus the problem. Sometimes when something happens, we put it in the middle of us, and it's you versus me. You're like, you're battling your teenager on behavior. It's like, why do you do that? I don't know. And it's someone has to win, which means someone has to lose when it's you against them. But when it's you two together versus the problem in front of you, there's connection, and it's less high stakes, and it's win-win. You both get to win. It's like, okay, this happened. What are we going to do about it? Let's talk about some solutions. If you're stuck, I've got lots of ideas, which you will obviously most of the time have most of the ideas. Sometimes kids actually do have really good ideas. I've been in meetings with kids with parents where they've done stuff, and the kid actually comes up with the solution. But it's helping them. What you're doing in that is you're helping them find ownership for the problem, but you're also saying, hey, I'm in this with you. You're not alone. Which teenage years are quite lonely, can be quite lonely, because they think I'm the only one, which we all know is not true. But they're the only person who's ever had this problem. They're the first person on this planet in all of history to have had this problem. No one else has ever had it before. They're that unique. Whereas it's like, probably if you talk to your friend at school, they'd say, oh yeah, me too. But no one, they don't talk about it so much. So that's where you guys can come in, and youth leaders come in too sometimes. Now, if your kid has like a particular struggle, maybe a big struggle, one of the more serious ones, like whether it's cutting or they've got an issue, like an addiction issue, sometimes something that's really helpful is when they want you to be a part, but they don't know how to bring you in because it's so overwhelming when it comes over them, is to create a code word with them. Code words I've found to be so helpful with teenagers. especially when there's eating disorders involved, is that actually when you give them a code word, that they can text you, or they can, if they have the strength, tell you. So you know they're struggling and they need my help. You know, I have had tons of bizarre code words with the kids. I always let them choose, which sometimes means you get like a song, like really crazy song title. Once it was like a full sentence. I was like, can we just bring it down to a word? And then I've had kids say things from like, I want a Coke, to I really want a banana right now, to like, it's always food attached somehow, even when food is what they're struggling with. But it's like, it's breaking down the barrier from them to you, like, because it can feel quite isolating when their world is closing in on them. They like, I don't know how to reach out. Giving them a code word can be helpful. Another thing you can do is you can help them create a plan for strong emotions. Now, you know, wonderful hormonal years of teens, they feel things so strongly, so intensely. You're like, they're weeping because, you know, I remember friends like weeping when Take That broke up, and I'm like, it's just a band, like, get a grip. but you know, people do that, like, they connect so strongly to it, like, those people are their hope. And so it's actually helping them have a plan for when they feel those strong emotions. It's like, okay, when they're in a really good place, let's talk about what to do when you feel really sad. Let's talk about what to do when you feel lonely. Let's talk about what to do when you feel angry or frustrated, or, you know, you just create a plan with them. And you can even come up with, like, colors for, I've had kids do this before, they come up with colors for the different emotions. And so they say, I'm having a red day today, which means they're feeling really, like, really angry. And it's just an easier way to communicate for them. Or maybe sadness is blue. Have you seen that film Inside Out? It's an amazing film for explaining to kids how emotions work. And the whole idea, actually, like, the whole message of that film is that all the negative emotions are there to lead you back to connection with others. I don't know if you caught that. I, just because of how my brain works, when I watch these films, I think about what's the message here. How can I use this to help people? And that's the main message of that film, is like, actually, the negative emotions aren't necessarily bad. They're only bad when you remain isolated. When they're positive is actually when they bring you back to connection. And the little girl in the film, like, reconnects with her parents at the end, you know, and that was Joy's lesson. Joy learned that sadness brought connection, which brought back joy in her life. How are we doing on time? Okay. One thing I'd say is if you do feel overwhelmed, get help. Sometimes I know it's like really obvious to say, but you've never parented teens before, so no one expects you to be an expert. And so it's okay to ask for help. Like, it's really probably the best thing you can do for yourself and for your child. Like, it's really hard to be objective when it's your own child. I've had lots of conversations with parents where sometimes it was our fault that their kid was doing stuff, and I was like, I don't think that's true, but I think there's probably something going on inside. We're happy to help, but yeah, sometimes it's helpful to just talk to other parents as well. I want to leave some time for you guys to chat and also for some Q&A. So I will recommend a book to you. If you're interested, it's called Boundaries with Teens. There's a book, Boundaries. It's quite a famous book on boundaries, but they've written one that's specifically about boundaries with teens. It's really good. It takes you through, like, all kinds of scenarios, and yeah, it's helpful. So why don't we do just a short, if you can put into one sentence something that you took away from that last little bit for your table. Let's do that, and let's try and do it in 5 minutes if we can. It's going to really challenge your communication. and then we'll do some Q&A. Okay, do you want to try and wrap up your conversations? All right. You can go back to your conversations after we've done a bit of Q&A. But a couple of things I forgot to say. I was just checking over my notes. With the one-liners, you might want to come up with your own ones because they might sound a bit... I'm aware I brought those from America, so they might sound a bit American. And also, you need to change them up because kids become very wise and they're like, oh, okay, again. So there's that. And obviously with, you know, communication is such a broad subject and I only probably scratched quite a small surface this evening. So I wanted to just give you, my goal was to give you some practical tools that you could go away with. But Sophie, I don't know how you want to do. Okay. So everyone can hear. So if you have a question or a comment, I'd love to hear them.
It's been really helpful. Thank you so much. I think you've touched on a lot of things, assuming that your teenager talks.
Yes, obviously.
I've got a very, very uncommunicative, sometimes no word of a lie. He can say 4 words in a day. How are you? How was school? Fine. Cup of tea? Yeah. Dinner? Dinner's ready. Coming. And we just not. So what? How do you draw out a teenager that doesn't talk?
Yeah, you need to start with, it is a lot of perseverance with open-ended questions. So if you can answer the question with a one-word answer, that means they can answer it with a one-word answer. So that's where the things like, tell me more, can you define this for me? Or asking questions like, well, what did you do? Not much. What's not much? What does not much mean? You know, what am I sending you to a school where you literally sit and do nothing all day? Like, you know, you can be, and this works so much easier with English teenagers than American ones, is you can be sarcastic with it and they find it funny. Like, you know, so it's like, really? Like, you really did nothing today? You like absolutely nothing? Like zero? Well, obviously I didn't do nothing. Well, tell me what, like, give me one thing. Just give me one thing. And then I'll free you from this turmoil of having to talk to your mother. And it's just building some rapport. Like, and, you know, over time, it's like, it just takes time. That's the frustrating thing, is we're also, you know, kids are used to everything instant, but we've also got used to everything being delivered tomorrow. If it's delivered in, like, 3 days, that's such an inconvenience. Like, how dare Amazon delay my package? But it's like we forget that we used to wait weeks for a video from the video store, and that, you know, we used to have to wait ages for things. But, you know, it's learning, it's delayed gratification at the end of the day, and it's just consistently. And learn, I don't know if you've heard of love languages. Learn your kids' love language and speak to them in their love language. So if you don't know what the love languages are, is it Gary Chapman? I think that's his name. You can just Google it. If you just Google 5 love languages, it will give you Wikipedia definition right there and then. And it's really helpful if you speak to them in their love language. But equally, you know, when you need to bring discipline, you also don't discipline them in their love language, because that actually can harm connection. So if your child is a words of affirmation love language, so they feel loved when you tell them how wonderful they are. Which, I mean, that's a lot of teenagers these days. But if you also use your words to discipline them, then they're actually learning that there's a negative in the way that they feel the most loved. So it's just finding other ways to do that. Whereas if a kid is all is gifts love language, like, and you know a kid's gifts love language when they remember every single thing you've ever given them. You know, but what, you know, gifts love language, like, really quickly, it tells them you thought of them when you weren't with them. But if you punish them by taking away those things that you gave them as a gift, that actually causes more harm than help. So actually they're better. It's better to use words with them, if that makes sense. Just giving a very broad question to that, which might create more questions. But back to you really quickly, it's just persistence and trying different ways in and, yeah.
Thanks, Amelia, for what you shared. A typical conversation in our house is, Barney, it's your turn to do the washing up. I will do the washing up if you buy me a pair of Air Max trainers. Oh. How do you sort of circumvent, like, that kind of negotiation with teenagers where they're like, I will do this for you if you do that for me? You know, any advice on that one? It's quite tricky.
You've got a real negotiator there, haven't you? Yeah, they'll be great future businessmen. But, in the moment, it's reminding them, like, yeah, that's not how life works, is it? It's like, okay, so you could escalate it with them. And you're like, okay, so you do washing up for me, I buy you trainers. What do you then do for me? Like, you throw it back on them. It's like, okay, so I'm now going to find out exactly how much they cost. I'm going to spend this much for you to give 5 minutes effort. That doesn't sound like a fair payoff. What else are you going to do for me? Like, if you want to work for them, there's other ways to work for them, but 5 minutes to get a very expensive pair of trainers, does that sound reasonable? It's probably not the best answer, but it's a answer, but it's sometimes coming back. It is actually going back, like throwing it back on them and using a bit of logic. It's really hard to argue with logic. My parents got me to go to youth group completely using logic that I could not argue with, because they're like, you need to go to the church youth group. No, I don't. Yeah, you need to go. I was like, really dorky people go there, Mum and Dad. I'm not going there. Well, why don't you just try it once? If you hate it, we'll never make you go again. I was like, I cannot argue with that logic. And so I went. and then I kept going because I loved it. But in their mind, they were like, okay, how can we give our kids something to do that is not going to the pub with her friends, because her friends are starting to go to the pub? So they found a solution, and then they used logic to get me there, and it worked. But logic can be a really good tool of, what is it logical that I would give you something that's worth this much for this much effort? I don't know. You could try that. It may not work, but you could try it. It's the thing is, it's just trying different things, isn't it? That's where, again, failure comes into. It's like, okay, well, that didn't work. Let's try something else. And there might be another parent in this room who's like, I have the answer for that. And they're going to come tell you afterwards, like, I know exactly what to do. This is what to do. Any other questions? It's fine if you don't have questions.
Hello, I have a 12-year-old daughter, and I love that you talked about the storytelling, that they build up the stories in their mind. So in her mind, I am the worst mother of the world. I don't know whether I'm alone with that or not, but my question is, often probably everyone else hears the same, that, oh, other parents let me do this, or never they can watch TV or use their phone the whole day. So any comment on that? How shall we react to that? Or
yeah, comparison, it's awful.
You can't
win in comparison, can you? Like, someone has to lose in comparison. That's why comparison is the worst thing in the world, because there's a winner and a loser. But the problem is they're comparing that friend's highlights reel to their whole life, which doesn't work, does it? It's like, okay, well, those parents could be doing that, but we don't know what else is happening in that house. But I know you, and I've known you since you were born, which is quite a long time now. And you may not like me for it, but I have a good idea of what's helpful for you. And I'm trying to set you up for the best life you could have. And so you may not agree with my methods, but this is where we're headed. Like, this is my vision for your life. This is what I want for you. And if I allow you to watch TV all day long, I'm not this is what you're not going to be doing in place of that. You're not going to be studying. You're not going to be connecting with other people. Like, if I let you play computer games all day long in your room by yourself, I'm not teaching you how to connect with other people. I'm not teaching you how to make friends. I'm setting you up to live quite a lonely life, and that is not what I want for you. Sometimes it's giving them a bit of vision of what you're doing for them, but it's also reminding them, like, hey, we don't know what's happening in their home. It's like, you know, I'm really glad I didn't get everything I wanted when I was a teenager. Now, at the time, I was not happy about it, but now I'm really glad about it because it's taught me certain values. I'm really glad I wasn't allowed to watch TV all night. I was allowed to watch one. I had to choose between Neighbours and Home and Away. That's all I was allowed to watch. So mean. And then my mum would be watching EastEnders, and I'm like, "How? Why are you allowed to watch that? I'm not allowed to watch that." And she's like, "Because I'm an adult." I hated that response, but I was like, "Fair enough." Now I'm like, "Fair enough." But it's like they limited it to that, so we'd play outside, and so that we would do our homework and other things, and so that we'd have friends, like, which is so important. You know, it's Mental Health Awareness Week this week, and the subject is loneliness. And there is a loneliness epidemic because everyone's living quite insular lives. Like, it's all on their phone, or it's, you know, all on a computer. It's not connecting with other people. And actually, when we connect with other people, it's, we feel a part of something, and we feel like we have purpose. And so, yeah, I hope that answers your question. Not really. A little bit. Not. It's really, the thing is that your kids, you may not be able to change how they view you right now, but if you remain consistent when they're older, they'll be able to actually look back and be so thankful. You know, it's like working with teenagers, whenever I have people join my team, I'll be like, this is the most thankless job you've got on the planet, because they will give you nothing. Like, they will not give you any encouragement. Like, they won't tell you, that was really helpful. Like, but in 10 years, they might come back and say, this one time, which I've had this experience, this one time you said this one thing and it completely changed my life. And you're like, on that day, you like were like stony faced when I said hi to you and you would not even acknowledge me. But apparently I changed your life on that day. And so you just don't, you know, we're sowing lots of seeds with the hope of giving them tools to like have a successful adulthood. And you know, every time I talk to parents, it's like, you're probably doing so much better than you think you are, because you don't have, there's not a great feedback system within teenagers, because they haven't got there yet. But when they're older, they'll get there. You know, like, I can look back and say, I'm so thankful my parents made me sit at the table every night for dinner and had discussion, because it taught me how to talk to people. It also showed me that they had value to know what's going on in my life. And actually, that's how my dad knew what my normal was and was able to call it out on day one. And if, you know, I had friends who ate dinner in front of the TV every night, and I was so jealous of them. And I'd be like, why can't we sit in front of the TV and eat dinner? My parents were like, nope, we sit at the table. This is what we do as a family. I don't care what they do. This is what we do. And, you know, and even now, like, when we are at home, we all sit for dinner at the table, and it also gave us value. They bring people in, and that we could, other adults for us to learn to talk to. And so I was really set up by my parents for a great adult life. But as a teenager, I was like, why do I have to sit here? Oh, this is so boring. So it's just knowing that the payoff comes, but it's not immediate, unfortunately.
Wonderful. Okay, cool. Let's do one more.
Hi, thank you. This is just something we touched on with our group. How, I know a lot of your tools involve sort of getting them to talk, but how do you manage you've just said something and you just get shouting back? How do you approach that to try to?
I would say it sounds like we can't have a conversation right now. Like, we can't figure this out. So let's take some time. Like, that's where I'd use a timeout. I'd call a timeout and say, hey, I'd say it's really hard for me to hear what you're saying when you shout at me. And I actually really want to hear what you're trying to say. Is there any way you could lower the volume? And if they're like, it's like, okay, time out. We need a time out. And we'll come back to this when you're ready not to shout. And you know, sometimes they do just need a bit of time to cool off. Yeah, it's that would be my advice. That's where I would call a time out in that moment. Well, ask them if they can, you know, say, hey, can you turn the volume down at all? No, all right, this is what we're going to do. I can't believe you're doing that. Okay, well, this is what we're going to do. You stick to your line of this is what we're doing right now. And you say, we'll come back when we can talk on a normal volume.
But that's the problem, because that's what they want. They want to get away from
you. Yeah, it's immediate.
And
doesn't mean you don't pull them back. That doesn't mean you don't bring them back in. You know, they want to get away. Okay, go get away for half an hour, and then I am going to bring you back. And if they're like, no, you're not. It is. I understand. It's really easy for me to say, yeah, this is what you do. But it's continuing. You have to stick with what you're communicating, and be, you know, that is the, you know, the yelling of, you're this. Well, maybe I, you know, I understand that that's how you're seeing me right now. That is not my heart for you. But I need us to be on the same volume for us to work this out. So we can sit here. I'm happy to sit here silently till you're ready. Or you can sit in your room for 10 minutes and come back. It's up to you, but we will be coming back to this conversation. Yeah, you can identify it. So, you know, if you recognize, you know, this is where you can mix some of them. If you recognize that they're just really exhausted and that's part of the yelling, it's like, okay, you're going to go have a nap. You know, you're going to go sleep tonight. And we're going to talk about this tomorrow. Because things, you know, at nighttime, everything's always heightened. You know, I don't know why. It's just a rule of life. Everything's always heightened at nighttime. I don't know if it's because our filters go or it's just something to do with not enough sunlight. But at nighttime, everything's heightened. So sometimes it's better to wait till the morning because people can see things differently when there's daylight.
Great. Thank you so much, Amelia. That is super, super helpful. Yeah, I have a toddler at the moment and I was definitely making parallels with the toddler. So it was helpful for me. I really, really hope that this evening's session has been helpful for you in whatever context you find yourself in. And I would just love to signpost you to some resources that are out there. And over the next couple of sessions as well, we're going to be delving into other subjects and those more detail on things. So do come along to those. But let me just go through some of the resources that we have. So I was just going to get them up for us. But also just to say that if you would like to grab someone at the end just to chat about anything or to pray with them, then please do grab anyone with a lanyard on and you can have a chat with them at the end. So these are some resources. So lots of you will probably know Off the Record. So they are a local charity providing free mental health support for young people. Can we just go back? Thanks. So young people can self-refer to them. They also can be referred through their GP. But they have the waiting list for one-to-one therapy is really long, but they do have drop-in sessions and they also have group sessions that young people can go to, which have spaces. There is Papyrus. So if any of the young people that you're working with or your children are struggling with suicidal thoughts, this is a great, great charity, not just for them, but also for you as parents. So they have great resources for parents online to help talk about those things with your young people and also to know what to look out for.
So Papyrus, they are dedicated to the prevention of suicide in young people. Young Minds is the UK's leading charity fighting for children and teens' mental health, and they have loads of great parent resources as well on their website, as well as for young people. Then in Christchurch and in Bristol, there is a great thing called the SPEAR program, which is a program for young people who are facing barriers getting into work and into education. And it's a 6-week course that helps to encourage their confidence and their well-being and give them tools to get into work or education. So if you know a young person who's really struggling and they are not wanting to, you know, come out of their room or get involved with anything, it's an amazing, amazing program for them. And then also here at Christchurch, we run weekly youth groups, places where young people can come and have a safe space where they can get to make friends, and also where they can learn about faith. So if they would like to come along to that, then you can check out our website. We have two more events coming up, so in June and in July, and the dates will be coming up for those. So do sign up for those if you haven't already. But thank you so much for coming this evening. It has been wonderful to see you, and thank you again to Amelia. Good night.